All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Tuesday, May 24th of 2022. We got off to a little bit of a late start here on today's stream, but that's okay. Thank you for being patient with me as we got this thing live here for today's show. If this is your first time you've tuned in, my name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. And Office Hours is enough of questions that you would like answered on this show. You can email us, support@sabersim.com. You can post your questions into YouTube chat if you're joining me here live. And you can post questions in the Office Hours channel in our Slack community. And if you haven't already joined our Slack community, there is a link to join in the description of every past show, along with a time-stamped list of everything we talked about on that episode. So if you want to bounce around, if you're catching the recording of this, either the podcast version or the video version up on YouTube, you can bounce around with that time-stamped list there. But for everybody watching me live, welcome. Thanks for tuning back in. We've got some good questions today. A few questions about research builds. Always one of my favorite topics. A couple different questions there. We'll review a couple processes, answer some questions there. I had saw another few questions as well about some NBA showdown kinds of questions here as we continue to go through the NBA playoffs. So we'll go ahead and just get into everything here. I'm going to actually start with the NBA showdown stuff, cause I think that's a good way to start here. But if you guys have other questions for me, fire away now. And this is a good one. This is from GA33. Good way to get us started here. And actually let's get the app pulled up too. That's probably important, for this particular show here. And the question says, if your stance on an NBA showdown slate is that it will be a blowout, what's the best way to capture this in SaberSim? Is it by increasing team totals for one team in step one or forcing 4, 2, or 5 stacks? Realize this is a bit results oriented based on recent games, but I've been curious for a while on this. Thanks. Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting question. And I'll show you why. So really, I think like either of these work pretty well. But I prefer to handle this more by handling this on the roster construction standpoint and targeting teams like the 4-2, 5-2 stack kind of constructions. And one of the main reasons why is because, you know, what I've found is if you mess with these team totals, and I do think like a Mavs blowout is an interesting angle here tonight as a kind of a way to get an edge. Did this actually go through? Oh, that didn't even seem to work at all. Huh, hang on. Let's see. Wait. One sec. Let's see what's going on here. So Luca's projected for 58.3. Okay, so I think we're fixing an issue here, actually, at the moment. Okay, so that actually does have a pretty big impact. Bumping up the Mavs to like 120 bumps Luka's fantasy point projection up by 4 points. You'll see there's no color indicator here happening at the moment. That's something that we're working on fixing that was just introduced with our last update. But so first of all, updating these team totals, I think, could be a pretty good way of getting this done, right? It's going to have some effect. What we're going to do is we'll go through our sim database, I guess, here, and look for a subset of simulations where the mean outcomes for both teams are 100 points and 120 points, and then instead adjust the player fantasy point projections to what they actually score on average in those subsets of sims. That's how the team total adjustments work. And it's a good way to get this done. But what I've noticed is in basketball in particular, and this might just be because of the way that a basketball game plays out, this has a smaller impact than it does on baseball, for example, right? If I have a different angle that I want to take than the field on a baseball slate, I love adjusting the team totals because it has this pretty significant impact across both teams and the pitchers in a way that I kind of intuitively expect. And maybe, you know, maybe to be honest, that maybe that's something that the Sims are telling us, hey, actually, you know, even if the Mavericks blow out the Warriors, that doesn't have as powerful of an impact on projections as you might expect, right? Maybe that's just true. But I've always found, to me, that editing team totals is a little bit more muted when it comes to NBA. But let's leave them on here because I want to run a little bit of an experiment and then talk about the other things that you can do in the build screen. So we'll just build, let's see, let's look at these here. We'll build a pool of 520 lineups and talk about what you can do on the build screen. And I think part of the reason why I like targeting blowout game scripts here using the roster construction is because it's almost not even so much that what my goal is here is to target certain, truly certain lineup optimals that I think the field isn't going to play, that are game script optimals. It's I am trying to target what I feel like is going to be a field bias of that lineup construction. And I feel like that's kind of like, I'm not saying so much that I think the field is going to improperly calculate the probabilities of certain game outcomes and then build optimals for those outcomes. I'm saying that the field is not really going to give enough respect to overweight lineup constructions, period. Right? Even if a 5-1 Dallas stack in the Sims is coming from a 6-point game that was never a blowout to begin with, the way I kind of end up thinking about it is like, how is the field going to overrate certain lineup constructions, regardless of the actual outcome there? And I feel like that's kind of a razor thin line that I'm crossing there. I hope I'm not confusing anybody out there, but that's kind of the main reason why I like to tackle this. Cause what we're seeing here, right, is that we bumped up the Mavs by 20 points and we knocked the total for the Warriors down, or we bumped up the Mavs to 120. We put the Warriors down to 100, and we're probably still going to get like a fair set of balanced builds, right? Because there are still a lot of balanced builds that can be optimal when that kind of game outcome happens. Right. And I don't really care about these because somebody building, you know, with the traditional optimizer or building my hand might end up at these constructions anyway, without having specifically tried to target a Mavs blowout. So that I want to target the lineup constructions that I think the field is unlikely to target. And that's why I like to do this on the construction level. So an angle that I think would probably be interesting for tonight's slate might actually even be a little bit more popular than I'm giving it credit for, because I think, you know, Max, actually, you know, maybe it might be a little bit more of a popular stance is maybe a Warriors blowout tonight. It looks like we have a pretty close spread again, so that Vegas thinks this game is going to be close. I think a blowout on either side, I don't know which one I feel like is going to be less owned. I would think my best guess is the field probably has a bias towards teams down 3-0 playing at home in situations like these, rather than the team that's trying to complete the sweep. I would actually think, actually, now that I'm talking through this, I think maybe a Warriors onslaught is kind of actually probably a bit of a more clever, or not even clever, but a little unknown, less owned strategy tonight. But I'm not so sure how I feel about that at the moment. But what I might do is go in and then eliminate the balance builds, maybe even eliminate the 4-2 builds to just see what we can get away with 5 stacks first. And we have, you know, 20, if I was trying to target Dallas, blowouts, right? Maybe we just immediately have 20, Dallas stacks, but you can do this without even adjusting the team totals. And what's nice about doing it that way, if you want to take that route, is you do this with the unadjusted Sims. So you're building, you know, 500 or 1500 Sim optimals and just sorting through, right? The blowout game scripts are still in the Sims if you build without adjusting team totals, right? They're still there. They're showing up at the rate at which those outcomes actually happen. So if you build with unadjusted team totals, the raw Sims, you still get to take advantage of those game scripts. And now, actually, the more and more I'm talking about this, two things. One, I think I started this by saying I was kind of balanced. I think I definitely at this point prefer for basketball to target this more with the lineup constructions than editing the team totals. And two, on this particular slate, I kind of think Warriors 5-1 stacks and 4-2 stacks are more interesting to me. If I'm going to be quite honest, I think that is probably one of my more favorite ways to play this particular slate. I think those are interesting constructions. I don't think a lot of people are going to do this. I don't think this is going to be a popular construction. I really don't. Especially because I think it's going to also require you to be well under on Luka. And, you know, Luka's probably most likely outcomes are probably having a great game. 55 to 65 fantasy points probably makes up about half of his Sims, but I think it's likely that those are overowned relative to their probability. And I think that's an interesting angle for tonight. So not to come on here and give you my favorite NBA showdown plays or lineups for tonight's slate, but I do think that's at least one interesting edge that kind of jumps out to me right off the bat. Of an interesting way to play this. So, and you can see these lineups are kind of cool too. I mean, you get lineups that make sense from a certain game script, because that's literally what these are built from, right? Like Curry captain, you got Luka on the other side, Draymond and Poole, and then, you know, two guys likely to get run if the game blows out, right? Similar deal here, right? So in this case, Draymond captain. The captain, I think you can kind of rotate through. Luka fade, Jaylen on the other side, Curry, Clay, Looney, Moses Moody gets run in the blowout, right? You can see how these, you can see how these lineups kind of are, find their success. So not to say this is the only way to play it. I just think in general, very common showdown thread I've noticed over time. I guess basically a heuristic that I've picked up on is that the field really likes to play balanced builds, three threes and to a lesser extent, four twos. And it just seems like five ones rarely end up getting rostered at the rate at which they're actually optimal. I think people just don't like to build that way. It feels bad. I think there's part of it, you know, you get that crowd that want, that's going to watch the game and you want a good game, right? You want to watch a good game. But two, I think there's just this perception that those kinds of lineup constructions are less effective than they really are. So anyway, that has become a bit of a, I don't know, preferred strategy that I've used. So anyway, GA33, to kind of wrap around, I know we kind of rambled here and maybe give you kind of a final answer here, because I have to talk through this stuff out loud to figure out how I actually feel about it sometimes on this stream. I think for NBA, I do in particular prefer targeting certain game scripts by messing with my roster constructions on the build screen as opposed to messing with the team totals directly. It's pretty easy to build 1500 different game scripts and sort through and find even 150 that are all targeting the exact kind of construction that you want to exploit. So I think that'd be my preferred way to handle this as opposed to adding the team totals. Not to say one's wrong, one's right, but I think in this particular situation, the goal here is not even so much to, you're not really leveraging, or at least the way I think about it, I'm not actually truly leveraging against the field improperly calculating probabilities of different game outcomes. That's not really what I'm doing. It's really about the lineup construction. I don't think that the field is going to appropriately consider how often 5-1s and 4-2s and unbalanced builds are successful. And one thing to be clear of here before I move on is this is true, like particularly in situations where the spread is close and Vegas and the field thinks that the game is going to be close. You know, if this was a game, doesn't happen so much in the playoffs, but if it was a regular season game with a 12-point spread, right? Well, then in that case, maybe I'm more interested in those balanced builds. Or maybe I'm playing like, maybe what I'm fading in that case are 5-1 type builds from the favorite, right? Because that's what's going to be popular. So it's not just like, it's not just like blindly always playing 5-1s of some random team in every NBA showdown. It's particularly trying to exploit the game script that's unpopular. And Aaron said, I remember Danny doing this for NFL showdown. Yeah. So for NFL, I do kind of a similar thing, actually. A lot of times though, I will do it. I'll also look at the actual game script, right? You can't really get away with this as much in basketball, but in football, like if a game has a low total and a close spread, right? Well, maybe one thing I'll do is like fade the players that the field perceives as successful in low total games, like kickers and defenses, and then stack up one of those teams and assume that the game blows out or something like that, right? Or stack up both offenses, like both QBs, like both wide receivers, that kind of thing, players that succeed when the game has a really high total, right? Basically just fading the conventional wisdom of the game. Or if you have a 56.5-point total in an NFL game where one team is favored by, 7.5 points or something like that. So a high total, pretty wide spread, right? Maybe in that case, you play more of a balanced build, but then shoot for a lower total game script. So I think just a very reusable kind of common thread throughout showdown contest types in general that I think you can be pretty successful with. So hopefully that helped. But let's go ahead and keep going here. So I quickly wanted to hit this because this is also on the NBA showdown thread. And then we have a couple questions about some research builds and some stuff like that. So we'll go to there next. So this was from D34. He said, can you talk about what the unique player count does for FanDuel or Yahoo showdown with the player IDs? With the players that have multiple roles, I should finish the question, right? If Butler is a superstar and Oladipo is a star, how unique is it? Is it counted if you switch them? So in that case, you would have... That would be counted as two unique players, right? So a player, basically a player position is treated as kind of a unique player in that particular situation, right? So Jimmy, even though the player IDs are handled differently, or even though the player IDs are the same, Luka at MVP is different than Luka at star as far as min uniques are concerned. So in your example, if you swapped two players, that would be two uniques, right? In that particular case. But this is a unique thing with single game because there's multiplier positions. In general, in other sports, I guess actually a good rule of thumb, if a player's fantasy point output does not change purely because of the position that they're played in the lineup, then that's not a unique player, right? So for example, in a classic slate, if you had a player in a utility spot versus their positional spot, that is not treated as a unique player, right? That's a lineup dupe. We don't want that. But it is a different lineup if Luka is in the MVP or the star spot, and the min uniques filter or setting, sorry, will pick up on that correctly, even for FanDuel and Yahoo. So good question. I had to check in with Matt on that one. So cool. Okay, let's hit a couple questions. So there's a couple questions about research builds here. We'll hit these quickly here. First one from Ed, and kind of a pretty long description of a process here. I'm going to read it out loud, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. But he said, hey, Jordan, I wanted to check on my logic on calculating potential over and under stacks in MLB. Sorry in advance for a complicated question. So first, he says he downloads two files, the most recent projections file, step one, and then run a research build, 1,500 lineups, which represents the optimal lineups. Then I use the count if function on the lineup file and put the calculated amounts in a column on the projections file. Okay, I think I'm following you. Then I use these optimal percentages by player becomes what I compare the ownership percentages to create the over-under exposure by player. Next to calculated stacks, I use either the number 1 through 9 or 1 through 7 and sum the SaberSim ownership. I think this becomes the estimate of stack ownership. Yes, it would in that case. And then I do the same sum with the optimal ownership of the same batters, which becomes my optimal stack projections for each team's stacks. Then compare the teams. Then compare the team's percentages to figure out what stacks to play for the slate. Is that logical to you, or do you need to change something in this calculation? It looks pretty good. It looks similar to what I do. I'm kind of processing it here as I read it. The one thing is I don't think you want to use sums for these, right? Because if you sum, you're going to start to get weird results. If you are summing up all of the ownership all of the ownership of a batter, right? Like, let me give you actually an example. It'll help to have this up on screen. So if you're going to say, I want to calculate how popular twin stacks are going to be tonight, and the way that you do that is by summing up their in total batter ownership. If you do that for every team on the slate and compare that, that will be somewhat useful as creating an ordinal ranking of this is going to be the most popular stack and this is going to be the next most popular stack and so on. But that number doesn't mean anything, right? Because you'll have some number that is like probably, I don't know, in this case, it'd be, you know what, like 30, 40, 50, 60, like this number for this, you might say 55% twins, right? That number, that actual literal number doesn't mean anything because the sum, when you're talking about essentially probabilities, what you actually literally will have calculated there, if you were thinking about it in a term of probabilities, would be what is the percentage of lineups that include any of these players, right? So I think if you want to get specific about those numbers, it might make more sense to use like an average rather than a sum. Same thing with the optimal rate, right? If you're trying to figure out the optimal rate of a certain stack of being successful, if you sum up the optimal rates of each individual batters and then compare that to every other team, that will be useful in forming a ranking of most likely to be optimal stack. But if you're looking for the exact quantified number of how likely that stack is to be optimal, that won't be a useful number for you. So you might not need that. Your process might work. And I think it's a good point to make here too, especially as we go down this rabbit hole deeper and deeper and deeper, and we get questions like this on stream where, you know, I know Ed's here almost every single day watching, and he's kind of built a process for that works for him based on what I've talked about on this stream. But as you get deeper and deeper and deeper into your own process, it's going to be less easy for me to say, no, don't do that. Or yes, do this next, because you're building something that works for you. So I don't want to tell you this is wrong necessarily. I get what you're doing here and I get kind of what you've created, but that is just the one thing that jumped out to me of potentially that calculation might not be the right thing to calculate, right? You may not want to calculate the sum of all the batters in a stack to determine how likely that stack is to be optimal if you actually need the exact quantified number, if that makes sense. But by and large here, I think that what you are doing sounds very similar to what I've built on my end, I use pretty frequently. So I think it all makes a lot of sense to me. I think there is kind of a big open question mark of, you know, so you get this number and you figure out what stacks you're going to play. What do you then proceed to actually do with that information is hard. Speaking from experience, like you figured out the leverage spots on all these different stacks, all these different players, all these different teams, then what is a tough question to answer. I've experimented with applying that in the form of custom projections, in the form of min and max exposures. I've messed with that just intuitively and just used it as a research tool, like a cheat sheet, and not changed anything in SaberSim, but just used it to help influence my decision-making. The hardest part when you're building out processes like these is not getting the information. It's figuring out what you want to do with it at the end. But yeah, it sounds like you've got a good thing going. So, but good question there. And then Forerunner asks another really interesting question here. And he said, in smaller contests like sub 10K entries, if SaberSim's backtesting tells us that we need a lower amount on the variance slider to build good lineups, would it make more sense to build with that, a lower sim, now sim precision slider, since you don't need the not optimal to win that contest? So I do think, so this has come up before, and I think this makes some intuitive sense. The problem is you start to get weird results here. And I'll show you what I mean. Essentially, you start to overweight the value of the average projections, and you can get answers that don't really make sense, right? So let's talk about this here. So for maybe those of you that are like, what is happening here? What is this guy talking about? Because I think some of these past few questions have required kind of knowing what's going on in some of the other past streams here. So what Forerunner and Ed were talking about here is my favorite, one of my favorite tools on SaberSim, and it's a research build. And what we do is we run a build at 0, 0, 10 settings, right? So we turn correlation off, we turn ownership fade off, we turn sim precision to 10. And basically what this does is every lineup is an optimal for a single slate simulation. We take a single game sim of every game on the slate, take the projections, that the actual fantasy point output that players scored in those games, and then print the optimal lineup for that slate sim. And what we get out of this, we'll do this 1,500 times, and what we get out of this is we get an approximation of how likely a player is to be optimal, right? If you're getting, you know, yesterday when we ran these, I haven't run one today yet, so I don't know what we're going to get out. But yesterday we were getting, you know, 50% Gerrit Cole in these kinds of builds. And that's basically saying, in 50% of simulations of the entire slate, Gerrit Cole's optimal half the time, right? It was an interesting slate yesterday with Cole, who then proceeded to give up 5 earned runs, but still strike out 10 and still end up, I think, being optimal, which was, it was kind of a roller coaster of Gerrit Cole emotions yesterday on the slate. But anyway, that's basically what this build does. And Forerunner makes a really good point here that, you know, it's great that we can calculate how likely a player is to be optimal, but what we really need, and he's right, is we need the ability to know whether a player, what the probability of a player being in the winning lineup is in a contest, right? And that assumption that the player's probability of being in the winning lineup is the same as that player's probability of being in the optimal lineup is not always strong. And it's weaker the smaller the contest is. It's also weaker the bigger the slate is, because there's more outcomes. This 1,500 lineup pool represents a smaller piece of the pie, the bigger the slate is, right? But that's what this kind of build gives you, right? So the question is here, well, what if we used a lower sim precision, right? What if we used the default value of sim precision for a particular contest, right? If we're looking for the $4.20 max, what if we used 0.05 and built like that instead? And it's an interesting idea. And you can actually test it out for yourself. And I was doing a little bit of this morning. And I don't think it's bad per se. I think you need to be careful. And let's run this and I'll show you why. You start to get results that I think don't match up intuitively with what is actually possible on the extremes, right? You are getting almost, it is almost, if you were to take it this way, it is almost as if you needed the ability to build way more lineups to properly calculate this out. And I'll show you what I mean, right? So let's look at just batters, right? Right off the bat, Jose Miranda is showing up in 32.9% of our 1,500 lineups at Sim Precision 5, right? It is hard for me to intuitively believe that the eight-hole hitter at min price for Minnesota has a 32.3% chance to be optimal in this contest, right? What's happening here is that he projects pretty well. And when we bucket sims together, he shows up as a good play when you're taking, you know, however many simulations into account when you're looking at Sim Precision 5, right? And you can see this on the extremes, I think, of exposure, right, at the top, right? Even a guy like Jordan Alvarez, right, is it really realistic to think that he has a 24% chance of being in the winning lineup in this contest? These numbers seem off to me. You also get a lot of guys that have zero, right? You start to get these guys that have like zero or very low percent chances, right? Does Ty France really have a 0.1% chance of being in the winning lineup in this contest at 3.3% owned? I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I buy that, right? And the reason this is happening is because we're essentially overvaluing too many sims at this point. I think you can also see this at pitcher, even though maybe to a little bit of a lesser extent. I think pitcher comes out pretty good when you do it like this. But that's on baseball, you're actually getting, I think, because ranges of outcomes for players are so wide that this actually went better than I expected. If you do this for something like basketball, which is where I first tested this out, you will get completely nonsensical outcomes where a player will have a implied 100% chance of being in the optimal lineup. Or not the optimal, sorry. 100% chance of being in the winning lineup for that contest. And it just doesn't make any sense. So there might be something to this strategy still. I think I'll probably want to test it out a little bit. I encourage you to as well. Maybe there's a middle ground here. Maybe at a higher sim precision, but not all the way to 10, maybe works a little bit better. I don't think it is enough to have it at the default value for the contest, right? I mean, especially, you know, you could take this all the way down to like this level, right? A research build at 0.01 is going to imply that certain players have a much higher percent chance of winning, of being in the winning lineup in a 500 person single entry than they actually do. It's just not going to make any sense, right? I've always preferred to stick to the 0.0010 when I do it because there is something kind of pure about this particular set of sliders. They're untouched, right? They represent a unapologetic, untouched view of the Sims for a 1500 sample size. So I like doing it that way. But I think there's still something to this line of thinking. In my process, I've just been willing to just basically eat this assumption, eat the error that's associated with this assumption, because I think it works pretty good for what we're trying to do still. But yeah, good question. Still probably some more thinking to do on it. So cool. Okay, let's go ahead and hit some other questions here. Quick one here. We'll answer this one. This is from Rogue. I'm going to wrap through the rest of the questions in Slack, and then I'll make sure we get everything into YouTube chat here. Rogue said, when you generate a build after a slate has ended or closed, are the lineups created automatically as top 20 out of 150 optimal ones, or does it still build lineups as if the game hasn't happened yet? It still builds lineups as if the game hasn't happened yet. So it will still use... So like if we go back to yesterday, for example, if these are the projections as they were at lock, or whatever the final update was, actually, I guess is better said for each game, right? Because like So if you were to build right now, it would be as if you were building at lock from yesterday. Now, if you want to mess around with actual scores, within a build, you can sort by actual scores. So you can go in here and sort. And do that, and you can like see like what are the highest actual scoring lineups in my pool and things like that. If you want to really get kind of weird with it, you can. The actual scores are here, and they are also present in the download file. You could open the download file, re-upload the actual scores as player projections, and mess around with that. I don't know what I would do with that exactly. I have done that just to see. I guess it's decent as a kind of a smoke test to make sure that the builder can find optimal lineups when given the answers to the test, which it does. But yeah, if you want to go in and backtest and play around, it does build lineups as they were, I guess, at lock. So okay. Question from Nikhil here. And he said, random question, or perhaps not. Oh, mysterious. But could you talk about why MLB ownership projections are limited to 1 decimal point on certain slates, the main slate, versus 2 decimal points on the 635 turbo slate? Let's have a look. Interesting. This is fascinating. I have no idea, is the short answer. Maybe we are just that much more precise on the turbo slates. No, we're probably not. I don't know why the answer to that is. Probably just kind of something that is, I guess, maybe a bit of an oversight there. I mean, to be completely honest, right? Like getting, if we're getting kind of scientific about it here, right? Some high school math science kind of stuff here. I feel like the 0.3, 0.35, whatever, any decimal points when it comes to ownership projections, right? There's kind of an industry, I don't know. It's commonplace in the industry to have ownership presented in this way, I think. 73.3, 27.0, 20.8. And those are the actual numbers that our model is generating when it comes to building ownership projections. But truthfully, the actual error of any ownership projection model is much bigger than a decimal point, right? Like really, even for a guy like, oh, let's go back to today, right? Enough about yesterday's slate. I mean, surely the ranges of outcomes of Sonny Gray's actual ownership projection tonight have to be like 20 to 22 to 38, 20 to 40, maybe, even in a large field. So the fact that there's decimal, I guess the point I'm trying to make, the fact that there's decimal points at all is kind of irrelevant, right? Like there is no way that any ownership model out there is actually accurate to the 0.6, to the point, to the 10th decimal spot. So all of this to say, I think it's just kind of if you actually asked the ownership model to project ownership out to the 7th decimal point, it probably could. I think it's just a random quirk on the app that we so happen to have 2 decimal points for some of these smaller slates at the moment. It's probably something we will just clean up. I mean, I think if you were actually just trying to be like totally functional, and actually this is an interesting point, thinking especially about research builds, I kind of generally think about a lot of my ownership projections as like, I would say plus or minus at least 2.5%, right? So if we're talking about a guy like Sonny Gray's ownership projection, and let's say we just round that to 28, like I actually kind of think about this as a little bit more of like 20, at least, you know, 25, 26 to 30, something like that. And I think it's useful if you are doing a research build approach and comparing optimal percentage to ownership percentage. You should be aware of the fact that if your ownership percentage is off, even if your optimal rate is exactly right, you could make the wrong decision, right? That's the risk of playing exploitatively. So if you do let's actually find a quick example here, but let's actually go back to the original research build I did and look for a good example of this, right? Like you should be, and this is a mistake I've made in the past, but if you are, okay. So like even actually here, like, right. So actually, let's do this. So right off the bat, let's look at pitchers, right? So Sonny Gray, our best fade on the slate, according to where everything's written right now, right? This is saying, you know, essentially another way of looking at these numbers is that Sonny Gray's ownership would actually have to come all the way down to 11% before you could make the wrong decision here, right? If you faded him, you are right until his ownership projection comes down to 11.1%, right? Which is kind of hard to do. It's probably unlikely that he's going to be 17% less owned than expected. But if we look at a guy like Blake Snell, right? Maybe you're like, oh, I'm going to fade Blake Snell. He has negative 4.7% leverage, right? Another way of looking at this is his ownership only needs to come down to about 22% before you're wrong. And if you play and he's 20% owned, you actually made the wrong decision. You probably should have been slightly over on him. And if you've ever done anything with leverage and ownership fade and that kind of thing, you will know that that has a really big ripple effect on your lineups. So you should be careful of that and understand. I think actually this was kind of a, I think, kind of a minor question that became an interesting conversation here. You should be aware of the error bars of ownership projections anytime you are using it to help you make decisions and understand, like, where is the uncertainty there of these actual outcomes, right? Like, for pitchers alone here, I think, you know, you probably feel pretty good about Sonny Gray. But a lot of these other guys, it starts to be a little shaky. I mean, I've noticed on positive leverage, it ends up, the risk is lower, but on some of these highly projected owned pitchers, right? If ownership comes in a little different than expected, you could be wrong. You could have made the wrong decision. So good thing to look at there. Good question. Let's keep moving. Okay. I'm looking at, okay. So I'm going to answer this question from Evan here. This came in yesterday after, actually, let me see. Did this get, I saw this was also in. Okay. Actually, it looks like this question got answered in support. So I'm going to, we'll handle that one outside of this here and jump over to YouTube chat. But if by chance there is an Evan here that was running into issues with PGA lineups watching and you're still having issues, let me know. And I'd happy to be returned to that. But it looks like Ruben helped you out in support. So let's go ahead and jump over to YouTube chat here and answer some questions. Ryan said, any plans to add detailed projections to NHL for next year would help to get more accurate with my NHL prop betting. I'm a bit surprised that we don't have them now, but I would say cautiously the answer is yes. I am surprised they're not here, to be completely honest. Are they in the download file? Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that'd be a good thing to add. Yeah, I would say cautiously yes. The NHL, unfortunately, I know there are some of you guys out there that are big NHL DFS fans. It is at a time of the year that is difficult for us to give it attention, placed shortly after football, right at the start of basketball, sports that just have way bigger popularity, both on SaberSim and in the DFS world. I would love for us to be able to spend some time on the NHL side of the app this year and make some quality of life improvements there. But that is why some of these things sometimes have gotten a little swept under the rug just because of the size of the other sports that are starting around the same time. So Matt says, and filters by player line numbers for next year for NHL. Yeah, that is another one that's on the list. And I think would be really useful. I know there's some build speed issues there with NHL as well. If you have a lot of stacking rules, it can be a little bit of a slower sport to build lineups for. There's a couple other things. We do have like an NHL list for next season that I would hope to be able to knock out some of those. So, but okay, let's keep it going. Patrick said, thank you for the front end support for tennis. Any recommendations for slider adjustments after projections and ownership is added? Let's see here. Hang on one sec. This is kind of a tough one. Hang on. I was trying to see if I can get a tennis slate to actually, okay, I was able to get it pulled up here. Okay. So tennis is interesting. I think if you were kind of thinking about distributions, it's going to resemble MMA a little bit in that it is a one-on-one sport. In every match, there is a winner and a loser. And then there's theoretically a range of outcomes from there, right? There's like a good win and a not so good win, even for the player that wins. I think you could borrow some of the defaults from, from MMA for sliders to at least get you started. That would be a good start, right? So you could come in here and, you know, look and compare what a similar contest in MMA uses and use that as a starting point. But keep in mind the number of matches. So in MMA, right, a big card is 15 fights, right? A smaller card get around 10. I think we had 25 tennis matches today, if I remember correctly. Like, if there was a 25 fight card on MMA, first of all, that'd be awesome. Second of all, You would probably care less about ownership fade because duplicates aren't going to be as big of a deal and probably need a little bit. You probably don't need as close to the actual optimal in that case just because there's way more combinations. So I would say you could use MMA as a starting point, but keep in mind if you're comparing to a card that has a lot less fights on it than matches for your tennis slate, I might turn down the default ownership faded and projections or sim randomness, smart randomness from there because you won't need as much. But so that's kind of what I would do there. So, all right. T said, sorry if this has been asked before. Can we get a builder for WNBA where we can enter our own projections? Thanks. Yes. Yes, that is something. Yeah, we would like to add that. So I'll bring that up with the team. Again, goal is at least to have all the slates that are up on DraftKings up available in the app. So I think knocking tennis out was a good one. Work on the tennis sims, just for those that are interested, is expected to start here in the next couple weeks as well. Cautious goal here again. I'll cautiously optimistic that we'll have sim support by the Wimbledon. So looking forward to that. But yeah, now that that's done, it does. It's not completely trivial for us to add it, which is why it takes a little bit of time. We have to get the slate data and the team data and the player data and all that stuff in and get that pulled up. So maybe we can turn our attention to WNBA now that tennis is up. So. Don says, do the Sims take into account MLB stats like WOBA, ISO, WRC, and others? This is always an interesting question when this question comes up. So the short answer is to the extent to which advanced stats like this are predictive of future player performance in that they help us actually understand the strength of a hitter, they may be taken into account in determining what the probabilities of different events happening when that player goes up to the plate against that particular pitcher in the game sim. But truthfully, most of these things are actually just more descriptive. They tell you what happened. They don't tell you if it's more likely to happen again in the future. And for that reason, it would be essentially double counting to take these things into account in the sims. So basically, like a traditional, a traditional projection model will use some kind of baseline for a player, right? So for a team, right? There's some baseline starting point. And all these other things get added on as additional layers until you end up with this projection, right? So you might have a baseline, you might have a projection baseline, and then that person says, okay, now I'm going to add in, you know, historical ISO rates for this player or this season ISO rates. And then I'm going to add in the park factors. And then I'm going to add in, you know, the strikeout rate of the opposing pitcher, like whatever they're doing. And they end up at this end thing. Right. And in those kinds of traditional models, it makes sense to think about it like this. SaberSim's approach is pretty different from that because we're talking about actual game simulations, right? We need to have an understanding of who that player actually is and who that pitcher actually is and the game context that's in the middle of that sim, right? It's not just, it's not just Byron Buxton against Sonny Gray. It's Byron Buxton against Sonny Gray in this game where it's the bottom of the third inning and there's a runner on first and third with one out, right? That's actually what's happening in the sim, right? And we're taking like that kind of context into account to determine what happens on that one play. So in that level of micro, again, we take into account these advanced stats only in the way that they can help us determine what's going to happen in that situation, basically. And I don't know specifically on these stats if they are taken into account. It may very well be that they are predictive and they are used into account some way or the other. But in general, I find that most of these advanced stats, when I talk to the models team here, that these kinds of things are not, because they would be double counting if they were. So I hope that helps at least a little bit. But if you are looking for something to dig into, because I know this question is often like, you want to go do your own research and figure out how to use this stuff. I think rather than looking for things that the model is not taking into account, I would instead spend your time looking at situations that are inherently difficult to model, period, right? Maybe because there is a new young rookie player or a minor league player, right? Or a pitcher coming off of an injury, right? That's a difficult situation for any model to know exactly how that's going to look. Things like that, situations that are inherently hard to model, because if there was some advanced stat out there that we felt was predictive, that was useful for making projections, predictions, that kind of thing, it would be incorporated. Okay. Brad says, Jordan, I know you've covered the research build a million times. I do have a question. When you do a research build, you gather basically ownership and stack information to what the Sims will believe as the winning lineup. Do you use that to go completely against that? Or how do you use the info for a research build? I feel I'm not using properly or understanding how to use it properly. Okay. So he said, say you see a guy or a team at 40%. What do you do with that? Good question. Yeah. So let's start with this. So I kind of want to start. There's a lot of, I mentioned this here at the start of the stream, that there's a lot of different, or not even at the start of the stream, when we were answering Ed's question, right? There's a lot of different ways to apply a research build. And I said, in fact, that I think the application of a research build is the hardest part, right? But you can take this in smaller sized chunks, and basically what you get out of the research build can be what is helpful for you, right? So what I would say is if you are kind of just getting started with doing these, don't set out to run a research build for a 12-game slate with a 236-player pool and try to do everything, right? Look for a couple angles that you think the field is going to handle inefficiently, right? And for baseball in particular, I like to break this up into, you know, hitters and pitchers, right? Makes a lot of sense, right? So don't try to analyze every single pitcher on the slate, right? Look for maybe one or two or three or whatever jumps out to you as inefficiencies, right? And an inefficiency is basically when this number, ownership projection, is very far away from this number, right? The player has a much greater or much lower percent chance to be optimal than their ownership percentage indicates, right? So let's just look at this, right? Like, let's see. Let me make this a little bit bigger so you guys can see, right? So for, let's see, can we see still? I don't need the lineups even to be here. I can't make it. Okay. Okay, that works. That'll work, right? So we don't need to find everything, right? We don't need all this, right? Like, we can just look, and I like to do this. I'll do this sorting by exposure or sorting by leverage, or there's a lot of different ways to do this. But like, one that jumps out immediately here is Sonny Gray seems to be pretty overowned, at least the way everything's projected at the moment, right? He's showing up optimal 11.1% of the time. He's in 27.6% of the lineups, right? So this would essentially be efficient ownership, right? If you were trying to match perfectly the percent chance of him being the optimal. So I might kind of make a note here that I certainly don't want to be even. I want to be even at best with the field on Sonny Gray. And maybe I want to be at around 10% or even totally fade him, right? But like, there's one that kind of stands out right away. I don't see a lot of other numbers that are jumping out here a ton, right? There's other guys that show up, right? Corbin Burns, 6.3% less likely to be optimal than his ownership percentage, but it's pretty close, right? There's not a lot of other things that really jump out here. So that might be one, right? So now we have an angle to take when it comes to our pitchers, right? Now let's go look at our batters. And we'll do the same thing here. Let's see what are the biggest ownership inefficiencies, right? Well, if we sort by negative leverage in the research build, right, and look at the guys, what are the biggest discrepancies between optimal rate and ownership? A few names that jump out here are all on the Angels, right? And then Tyler Wade is the sixth name, right? Starts to make me feel pretty immediately skeptical of Angels stacks. Similar kind of trend, and you'll see this pretty typically with baseball, right? Similar, this kind of groups up with stacks, but similar kind of trend. You see a little bit of that with Houston, and the Dodgers maybe a little bit two here as well, but to a lesser extent, like definitely the Angels, right? So we have two kind of, I feel like we have at least two different kind of fades here of, you know, I'm not super thrilled with the idea of Angel stacks given this, and I'm not super thrilled with Sonny Gray at pitcher. And we'll flip this and look and maybe see if we can find any fades, right? Here's one that's interesting, right? Best under-owned stacks. One that's popping up here a little bit here is Detroit. And if we end up taking a full page, right, when I say popping up, we see Baez has number one, Torkelson has number two, right? Only very low percent chances to be optimal themselves, But if we're going to fade Sonny Gray anyway, right, maybe this is another reason to play a little bit of Tigers. So maybe we've got kind of another angle there as well. The last thing I'll kind of do typically is I'll look to see, you know, are there any teams, because it's not just about, you know, if there was, if you knew, for example, that there was a player that was going to be 0.1% owned, right? And they had a 1% chance to be in the optimal lineup, right? That player is essentially 10x suboptimally owned, right? That player is being owned at 1/10 of the rate they should be owned at, but they're still only going to be optimal in 1% of total lineups. So you, one of the things with your research builds is you don't necessarily want to just take just leverage in a vacuum, right? You kind of want to, you want to combine what's the chance of this play paying off, which is what you get in the ownership column, along with the leverage column, which is like how much does the field realize that, right? So one thing I'll also do is kind of look at the exposure column and look for any players that, you know, project well and look like they're going to be underowned, and look for just a general trend with stacks. So, you know, Arizona, Oakland, Texas, not really anything like really jumping out to me here that makes me want to like get super excited about any stack. I do think maybe a little bit of Detroit is interesting, but maybe a little bit of Arizona, Oakland, Texas, but nothing really jumping off the page here. At pitcher, you know, it is interesting that there's positive leverage on Zach Allen and Logan Webb, two pitchers that are the fourth and fifth most likely to be optimal, and the first two that are owned inefficiently on the positive side. So, and then I'll like literally take some notes here. So let me show you what I mean. And like, this is when I don't have a ton of time to do like a my longer process, I will legit do this. And I will come over here and I will say, okay, let's see, let me get this up. Okay, so I'll literally open my Notepad app up and I will say pitchers, right? And I'll just kind of write down what I learned. And I'll actually do this in real time. I won't do it after the fact so I can remember everything. But I kind of like the idea of the Sonny Gray fade, or I would probably be like max 10% on him based on his optimal rate, right? I think maybe over the field on Gallen and Webb, who were the first two. I'm fine playing a little bit of Snell, Burns, Cease, right? All guys that seem to be pretty efficient. But if the field's a little under on these guys, right, I might be interested in a little bit of Gallen or Webb, or at least maybe guys I might be interested in playing. And then stacks, I kind of wanted to fade LA. And then I might be a little bit cautious of Houston and Dodgers. And Oakland, Texas, and Arizona look slightly underowned. And I'm kind of making an assumption there, but you know, if Varsho is underowned and Seth Brown is underowned and Brad Miller is underowned, like those stacks might also be underowned. So I just realized you guys can't see the app now. It's annoying. I can't have two screen shares up that I can flip between two here. But what I was saying, right, when we were looking at this, Varsho looks like slightly underowned, Brown, Brad Miller. So like maybe interested in those stacks. So now, okay. So now it's time to build some lineups. So now let's do, let's say we're playing the $4, right? And let's build this. And we got a little cheat sheet here. And again, I can't pull it up because I can only share one screen at a time, but we have a little cheat sheet here, right? This is something that we can kind of use. And it's worth saying, actually, I think, you know, if we're actually talking about building lineups, we should check the weather. So let's go check Kevin Roth. So would be a good thing to note, you know, there's a little bit of a weather game here tonight. So Philly and Atlanta. So maybe if we were actually building final lineups, maybe we want to X that game, or maybe we want to be a little cautious. If one of my plays was playing in this game, I'd probably be a little bit more cautious of it. If one of my fades was in this game, I'd probably be even a little bit more excited about it. But that would be one thing to check. And it is around this time in the process where I kind of do that check. But let's build this here now and see what we get. Okay, and you'll see a lot of times, you know, if you're not touching other projections or doing other things as part of the process, a lot of times what you get out of this will kind of follow your research build, because that's what partly what ownership fade does, right? But let's now add some value, right? Where this is like, we're going to add value based on the cheat sheet. We're getting 15% Sonny Gray. I'm going to just fade him. And I typically start, when I'm doing this, I start with the most aggressive version of my fade, right? Or the most aggressive version of my player fade, and then walk it back from there if I don't have enough lineups to get away with it. But we'll start with a fade of Sonny Gray. And I also liked, I thought Gallen and Webb were interesting. So I just want to make sure I'm getting some exposure to those guys. So we have some Gallen here. We're a little bit more than 2x the field on him. We're not getting any Logan Webb, and I kind of want some. So I'm going to just bump him up to 20 to just make sure we're getting there in a few lineups. And I'm going to actually set both of these guys to 25 so that we're getting a little exposure to these guys. Okay. Cool. And now let's go over to, we'll go to the team stacks. So we're not getting any Angel stacks, right? That's the ownership fade working for us. That's working in our favor. We're getting to Arizona. We're getting to Texas. We're not getting to any Oakland. And I thought they were interesting. So maybe we give them a little love. Maybe we do 15%, right? Don't need a ton, right? We're talking about, again, remember these guys in the research build had optimal rates of 40%. What am I talking about? I think I just saw the number 40 and read it, of like 10% or less, right? So we don't need to go crazy with our exposure to these stacks because the rate of them paying off, even if they're positive leverage opportunities, is still kind of low, right? So, and then I'll check my stacks and make sure my stack types look good. I guess at this point, I'm basically just doing like kind of a full demo, but that's okay. We got time for it. So stacks look pretty good to me. 5-3. It's a 12-game slate. I want big stacks tonight. 5-3, 4-3, 5-2, 4-2-2, 5-4-4. I might on tonight's slate, since it's just, I mean, it's a big slate. 12 games is almost as big as the slates get. I want to just really be correlated. I might force only these stack constructions. And this is kind of my bread and butter stack constructions where either you're totally correlated in a 5-3 or a 4-4, or you have one one-off at max. And I like running these kinds of constructions a lot. So I might do something like that here tonight. And then I'll typically kind of do another pass through and see how things are looking and go from there. So I'm getting exposure to some of the leverage plays I liked. I've made some of the fades. I still have no Angels. I kind of like how this looks. The last thing I would do here is probably manage my risk by editing exposures. And actually this looks pretty good by default in a 20 max kind of build. Generally I'll probably be pretty comfortable with about 40% max to any one batter. So I'm probably about okay with that. Pitchers. I'm on 20 lineups, probably just fine playing whatever comes out of this, to be honest. Like if it's 100%, sometimes that's fine. If it's 11% or 55%, that's fine too. But I would want to make sure, you know, that my exposures looked about the way I wanted to. So, and that's like literally like this might be done. Like this would be basically very similar to what my process would look like for a slate if I had about as much time as we just had to do it. Like this would, I mean, obviously I wouldn't be narrating it live here for myself if I was just doing this. So it would probably take a little less time, but this resembles very closely to my 10 minutes. I have 10 minutes or 15 minutes or less, and I need to build 20 lineups, and I want to do something kind of unique of my own research on the slate, right? And I'd feel pretty good about this. So, when I have a lot of time, when I have much more time to get this done, I will either do more and like even dive in a little bit more, that's when I start, like when I've talked about pulling some of this down into Excel, that is when I start kind of doing leverage calcs on every player in the field and figuring out, you know, ownership inefficiencies on every single player. But as a starting point, you don't need to do all that. And this, I think, is a good way to get familiar here. So Brad says, I definitely wasn't utilizing research builds properly. I don't think I was understanding leverage and ownership projections completely either. Thanks, Jordan. Very helpful. Yeah, I'm glad that was helpful. And yeah, those are important. I mean, those are kind of your building blocks here. Those are your fundamentals. So those are core to be successful with this kind of strategy. And a lot of it just comes down to, you know, recognizing what these different numbers actually mean in the context of this kind of build, right? Because they mean something differently when you're doing a 0, 0, 10, 1500 lineup build, research build, right? They're literally different. Ownership projection is always the same, I guess. Ownership projection is ownership projection. It is the expected average percentage of lineups in a large contest that would roster that player. So that's always true. But your exposure in this case is actually a probability, because it's a probability of that player being in the optimal. And your leverage is the inefficiency in, and it's directional, right? It's saying, you know, with Sonny Gray example, right? 17.2 points of negative inefficiency by the field in this case, right? So, and I think one thing I should note here too, that I touched on it throughout the stream, but I really want to reinforce it here because I actually think it's important and I've never really hit it that hard before, but you should be aware of the, once you get more familiar, I don't want to overcomplicate anybody that watched what we just did and is like, great, I'm ready to build tonight. Like, good, great. But once you're familiar with that and good, well, you should be aware of the fact that there's error associated with these measurements, basically, right? And like, part of the reason I don't care if I'm playing Corbin Burnes based on this research build is because his ownership projection might be a little bit lower or a little bit higher. This true number might be a little bit lower or a little bit higher. I am typically, especially when, you know, first getting started on research builds, I mostly want to find the guys where it's really off, where you're getting this kind of value. So anyway, before I ruin it, let's stop on that question. Patrick real quick said, Sim Precision Slider, a new update. Is that the same as ownership fade? No, it used to be Sim Variance. We changed it to Sim Precision. Sim Variance is just not actually really descriptive of what it did. This is, I know this is, if you've been playing on SaberSim for at least a year, you've seen this slider take on three different names. Sim Precision, I think, is what we are going to stick with. We're all pretty happy with that. What it is saying is it is how many simulations are you looking at in a given lineup, right? How many simulations go into a lineup? The higher this is, the fewer number of sims. And that's why at Sim Precision 10, it is a single game simulation for every game on the slate that builds that lineup, that the projections from a single game sim are used to build that lineup. At zero, it would be every sim. It would be the average projection. There would be no precision, right? There would be no simulation precision. It would be every simulation, right? So very precise angle of certain sims, very imprecise on certain sims, right? You're looking at a very wide angle here, very narrow angle here. So Brad said, were you also referring that leverage shows how much they show up in the optimal line? No. So exposure does. That's what exposure gives you, that number in the context of a research build, right? When you're looking at this here, right? This is this number, 325, right? So Blake Snell was in the lineup 325 times out of 1500, which is 21.7%. And we're basically saying that this 1500 sample size represents the whole, represents every possible optimal lineup you could make. So this number is basically saying Blake Snell has approximately a 22% chance of being in the optimal lineup. That's what that number is saying here, right? And the field, if they were playing perfectly optimally, right, thinks it's this number, right? So it's an arbitrage, right? Or actually, I mean, the Sonny Gray example is the best example on the slate tonight, right? This is an arbitrage. If the SaberSim model thinks the number is this, and the market, basically, the field, the going price in the form of ownership is this number, right? I realize this is small again for you guys, so let me, right? That is an inefficiency. That is a market inefficiency. And the leverage column calculates the direction and magnitude of that inefficiency. So, I mean, you don't even have to think about this as in the form of players, right? You can think about this in the form of commodities, prices, anything, right? Like, the market tells you this is this price. And your model says that it should be this price. Would you ever buy that? No, I wouldn't, right? Now, what about this, right? The market tells you that this is this price and your model tells you it's this price. Would you ever buy that? Well, probably, but that's not as big of a difference. And what if you're a little bit wrong? And what if they're also a little bit right? And, you know, maybe you're a little less excited about this. So, but Patrick says, any recommendations on a good DFS content provider? I don't know if that's tongue in cheek. I think it's probably not. We have partnerships with Run Pure Sports, True DFS, DFS Karma, and Full Time Fantasy. And they all provide more kind of slate specific articles and core plays and recommendations and things like that. So I'd recommend checking out any of our partners if you're interested in more of that kind of content. Because I know we definitely do a little bit of a different thing here. I like to think that we're still creating good DFS content, but I think I get what you mean. So, NW said, how should you account for leverage in a single entry contest? Good question, right? So if you have one single lineup, right? You have only one lineup. You don't have as many opportunities to express all of this, right? You can't say, I want to play that guy and fade that guy and play this stack and fade this stack. And I want to be even with the field there, right? The less lineups you have to play with, the less decisions you get to make. And the more I would say you should rest on the strength of your own, the own single decisions, right? So like, let's use the same research build we had just now, but now let's do a single entry lineup and see what we could do there. So I'm going to go back now. We're going to build one lineup and use the same research build we just did. Take the same conclusions. We're going to get to do less. We won't get to do as much because we have less to work with. We have one lineup, but we can still use the research build and figure out a couple angles to play, right? So let's see what we get out of this, right? And see. But, and I'm going to have a sip of water here. This has been a fun show. You guys got me going on a research build stream today, which is my favorite. So I feel like I got to have some other people from the Saberson team come back on too, because this is something that I do. And because I'm the guy that's on here every day talking to you guys, I don't want to necessarily create the impression that this is the singular right way to use Saberson. I mean, there's so many different ways to do stuff. This is just what my process has kind of become over time. So we always end up talking about that. But I should have some other people from the team come on soon and talk about, you know, a couple other creative ways to do things, because there are other ways to do things. But okay, so now we have a single entry build, right? And so let's look at this, right? And like, basically, let's look for reasons to fade it, right? So basically, when I do a single entry lineup, a lot of times I'll pull the lineup up and I will look for a reason to fade that lineup. And right off the bat, actually, I don't know if you guys saw it, but the ownership projections updated. Obviously, you would want to do your research builds and all of your work at the end of the day when the numbers are final. But it actually looked like the Diamondbacks are going to be chalkier than we first projected. So maybe we want to fade them now, right? Now Varsho's coming in at like 20% owned, right? So maybe we want to fade Varsho. Maybe that's kind of our first play, right? And now we're looking at this lineup, and this has a little A's Angels mini stack, and it doesn't look super owned. But that was a team that came up that we wanted to avoid in our research as well. So maybe we skip out on an Angel stack for a single bullet. And I'm basically looking until I find a lineup that I can't find a reason to eliminate. And maybe we just decide we don't want to. Oh, actually, you know who just popped up? Sonny Gray. And that's our guy that we said we don't want to play. So let's X Sonny Gray out. Okay. Here's an interesting one. Kind of like it. Cease and Snell, who were pitchers that we were fine rostering, a nice lineup construction here. We get a Texas 2 stack here as well. That was a team that looked like they were a little unowned. It's our fifth best stack in the pool. It's got a good construction. Freddie Freeman one off. Looks good. I'd probably play this lineup. But you could continue taking this as far as you want. Maybe you don't like this lineup. I don't know. Maybe there's maybe 2 9-hole hitters doesn't really do it for you for this. So maybe we X this one out and let's look for another one. Yeah, let's X out of Banez too, because we just don't want to play a 9-hole hitter for one reason or another, right? Oh, we're getting a lot of 9-hole hitters. Maybe salary is tough to get here today, but okay. Maybe we don't want to play a 3-3-2, right? So I'm just like eliminating. I'm looking for reasons to eliminate lineups, right? Combined with my research build. Maybe I don't want to play a 3-2-2 either. Okay, so we have another 5-2 here. So there's another interesting one, right? I kind of like this one too. We've got White Sox 5-stack, again, pretty low owned. Giants, I always like playing the Giants. Nobody ever plays the Giants for some reason, unless they're in Coors. Then everybody plays the Giants. But I feel like anytime the Giants are at home, everybody just skips them, and they're good. It's a good team. Like, there's always a little upside there. Zach Gallen, who popped in our research build as well, somebody that was a little owned. So maybe we play this one instead, right? It's our 18th best lineup. Totally fine with that. So we don't get to go get exposure to everybody we targeted. We don't get to have Webb and Gallen and fade Sonny Gray and fade Angels and Houston and Minnesota while also getting exposure to Oakland, Texas, and whoever. Like, those are the ones that popped in my head, right? We don't get to do everything that we got from our research build, but you can still use a research build and learn something to build a single lineup that you like. So Brad said, so essentially the top 10 players in exposure order is the most optimal line. Kind of. The problem is there's like salary restrictions, right? So like, if you were to just actually look at this, it's not. So like, even if you like, okay. So even if you were to say the optimal build is like Snell and then Burns, who is the second highest, right? Like, wait, the filters is probably not a good way to do this. We're going to run into some issues here, right? Like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's salary issues. So like Snell, Burns, the third most optimal player is Cease, and we can't even use all three pitchers. So if we skip the other pitchers and do Snell, Burns, Buxton, Varsho, Judge, Seth Brown, like, you might be able to build a lineup that would like kind of look like a cash lineup doing it that way, I guess. It would probably be like a pretty decent cash lineup, but you'll have salary problems, right? Like, that doesn't necessarily equal a lineup. So, but okay, cool. And I do see Nikhil had followed up as well about the ownership thing, and said that he thought that there was a difference in the algorithm. No, I think it's just a rounding thing. I think it's entirely just a rounding thing. So we've got, for whatever reason, certain slates set to round one way and the other round the other. But so, all right, cool. I'm going to leave it there. I don't see any other questions coming in. So that was a fun stream. It was a good one today. But I appreciate everybody being here, hanging out with me. I will be right back here again tomorrow. Same time, same place, 2 p.m. Eastern. Actually, not same time because I was late today. So hopefully on time tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back. So if you watched this or listened to this show and enjoyed it and haven't already signed up for SaberSim or haven't been back in a while, free 7-day trial on our site, SaberSim.com. If you sign up for a trial in the past but haven't signed up since the start of this season's baseball, we reset your trial. You can get another 3 days free. So come check us out. Come see me tomorrow. Have fun with the 12-game slate. 12-game slates are always fun here. Good luck tonight, and I will see you guys all tomorrow. Take care.